This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, December 27th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, holidays got you down? We'll hear from a psychologist about beating the winter blues. And KGNU's young adult book reviewer will explore teen mental health issues with the author of the new book, The Art of Insanity. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth. Today, the KGNU Science Show will look back at the top science stories of 2022. At 9 a.m. comes another archival recording of British philosopher Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, Joanne Cole will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for the headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Holiday travel woes continue at Denver International Airport due to flight cancellations and delays. Airlines blame the snarl on the winter storm that blew through much of the north and west of the country in recent days. According to FlightAware, DIA at 5 p.m. Monday had 461 flight cancellations and 469 delays, with Southwest Airlines accounting for most of Monday's delays. A Southwest Airlines spokesperson told the Denver Post the airline is still experiencing disruptions because of lingering effects from winter storms. But the spokesperson also confirmed a leaked memo suggesting the airline had an operational emergency last week because of a high number of absences by ramp agents. The spokesperson could not say if staffing issues are still causing problems and denied any coordinated activity by the airline's employees. A president of a union representing some Southwest flight attendants criticized the airline Monday by telling CBS Colorado that despite many union demands to modernize, the company's management has failed its employees. Boulder County says the federal pandemic relief funding for the county's Emergency Rental Assistance Program will run out in early 2023. The county's online application portal for the program will shut down on January 14th, with no applications accepted after that date. County officials are encouraging anyone who is eligible to apply for pandemic rental assistance while federal funds remain for the program. More information is available at www.bocorentassistance.org. The Daily Camera reports the county dispersed more than $9.5 million in rental assistance between March 2020 and October 2022 just for households in Longmont and Boulder, while also distributing assistance to applicants and other countywide communities. United States Representative Joe Neguse and Senators Michael Bennet and John Hickenlooper are urging over 65 insurance companies to extend the living expense coverage of those affected by the Marshall Fire for another year. The 12-month and additional living expense coverage will expire with December 30th, marking the one-year anniversary of the firestorm. The coverage applies to people whose house has burned down and need money for them to live elsewhere. The three lawmakers say many Marshall Fire residents are still working to rebuild their homes, with many families starting the rebuilding process until recently. The three federal lawmakers sent a letter to insurance providers last week, which includes major carriers such as Travelers, State Farm, USAA, Liberty Mutual, Progressive, and Allstate. Early in December, the Colorado Division of Insurance also sent an open letter to insurance providers, urging them to extend the coverage up to 24 months. Boulder County officials will soon present information on rebuilding resources available to people impacted by last year's Marshall Fire. KGNU's John Kellen has more.
A community meeting set for this January 11th will gather fire-affected residents of unincorporated Boulder County and their design professionals who've been assisting with rebuilding. The meeting will focus on what has worked well and what hasn't, and the lessons learned along the way. The in-person meeting will take place from 6 to 8 p.m. at St. Ambrose Episcopal Church, Barcelona House, at 7520 South Boulder Road in Boulder. In related news, Boulder County residents who lost their homes in the Marshall and Calwood fires are getting some help in defraying the costs of rebuilding. Boulder County commissioners approved a plan this month to reduce the cost of permit fees for people rebuilding in homes lost to those fires. Commissioners say the move is an acknowledgement that rising construction costs have outpaced insurance coverage and is aimed at property owners in unincorporated Boulder County. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
A power interruption at the University of Colorado Boulder campus early Thursday morning caused the university's main boilers to trip and go offline, with a further ripple effect of lost steam pressure or heat and freezing and bursting pipes to 10 campus buildings. Damage also included flooding. A spokesperson for CU told the Daily Camera the damaged buildings are not in one area and are throughout campus, including parts of the engineering center and a building at East Campus. Each building also had a varying amount of damage. CU has not determined the cause for the power interruption and expects mitigation crews to have everything cleaned and back to normal prior to students returning for the spring semester. After repeated requests for transparency by journalists and an oversight panel of citizens, the City of Boulder released an internal investigation summary last week detailing alleged misconduct involving detectives in the Boulder Police Department. KGNU's Benita Lee has more.
According to a report released to journalists at Boulder Reporting Lab, management issues down the chain of command at the Boulder Police Department resulted in dozens of reported crimes going uninvestigated. Boulder Police Chief Maris Harold discovered the backlog of uninvestigated cases earlier this year. In July, Deputy Chief Steve Redfern filed the complaint that launched the internal investigation. The probe centered around Officer Kwame Williams, a detective who told investigators he had been having to, quote, triage, unquote, his caseload for the past few years. His former supervisor, Sergeant Brannon Wynn, told investigators that Officer Williams came to him in 2021 saying he was stressed and, quote, underwater, unquote. Sergeant Wynn told investigators Williams was not lazy or incompetent, but lacking help because of staff shortages, COVID disruptions, and restrictions to reduce overtime. Between 2019 and 2022, Williams was assigned almost 90 cases. But when Williams left the detective unit to take on patrol duties, he still had 46 open cases. The Boulder County District Attorney's Office is now reviewing them. The statute of limitations expired in 5 of those open cases. Chief Harold disciplined 4 officers for violation of compliance with values, rules, and general orders. Disciplinary action ranged from 5 days suspension without pay for Officer Williams to an involuntary transfer for a commander in the detective unit. When asked who was to blame for the situation, Sergeant Wynn told investigators, quote, "We all own a piece of this," unquote. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
For today's weather, the National Weather Service says skies will be mostly sunny with a high of 54 for Boulder, 58 for Fort Collins, and 66 degrees for Denver. Winds could gust as high as 37 miles per hour for Denver and 60 miles per hour for Boulder. There is a high wind warning in effect today from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Winds could gust as high as 85 miles per hour in the Front Range Mountains and foothills. Tonight, skies are expected to be mostly cloudy with lows in the 30s. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. We're told the holiday season is the most wonderful time of the year, but that's oftentimes not the case for people who struggle with grief, loss, isolation, or seasonal affective disorder.
Seasonal affective disorder, SAD, is clinical depression, and therefore the symptoms are the same as those in non-seasonal depression.
Kelly Rohan is a professor of psychological science at the University of Vermont, who specializes in the study of adult mood disorders. She says symptoms of seasonal affective disorder include feeling sad, losing interest in previously enjoyable activities, extreme fatigue, difficulty concentrating, changes in eating and sleep patterns, feeling guilty or worthless about oneself, and in extreme cases, thoughts of death or suicide.
These symptoms happen on a continuum. People with seasonal affective disorder are at the extreme, people with clinical depression in the fall and the winter months. Most people at a high latitude are going to have a few symptoms, maybe sleep a bit more, have a bit less energy. Mood might dip a little bit, but not to the level of clinical depression. So for folks that experience some symptoms but don't have full-blown clinical depression, there are a few things that you can do that would be helpful. First of all, work really hard to stay in your routines. It's really important to fight through the fatigue, not go into hibernation mode, and stay active. Keep doing things that are fun and enjoyable. Find things to celebrate in the wintertime, things that you like to do, maybe things that are specifically available in the wintertime and are not available in the summer. Skiing, ice skating, snowboarding. Get out there and engage with winter. Find something to love and enjoy about the season. Third, go for a walk first thing in the morning after sunrise. There's plenty of good light to be had in the wintertime, even though the dawns are happening later. This has two benefits. It gets more light to the retina and helps to entrain our body's biological clock to the light-dark cycle, which helps us sleep better, which helps us feel more alert. And also, there's antidepressant effects associated with moderate physical activity. So two birds, one stone, a walk and all the physical activity benefits associated with that, and more light to the retina first thing in the morning, which is helpful to the biological clock.
One group that's been experiencing a spike in mental health challenges are teens and children. Children's Hospital of Colorado declared a pediatric mental health state of emergency last year. Some schools have made attempts to increase mental health support on campus, but demand for services can easily outpace the supply of counselors. Teens are often left to their own devices, but sometimes those devices can be relatable books. As part of our week highlighting the voices of teen volunteers with the KGNU News Department, we hear from Phoebe Donovan. Over the course of 2022, Phoebe, who was in ninth grade, has become KGNU's young adult book reviewer. She made time during her winter school break to read the new release, The Art of Insanity, and speak with the book's author, Christine Webb.
Christine Webb, can you start by telling us a bit about The Art of Insanity and what led you to write it?
Sure. The Art of Insanity is about Natalie, who's a high schooler who's struggling with a recent bipolar disorder diagnosis and kind of coming to terms with that and what that's going to mean for her life. And in the meantime, she's got a big art competition coming up and she's got to kind of keep everything together in preparation for this big art competition. And what led me to write it was I myself was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and I didn't really know what to do with that. So writing is just kind of how I handle life. And so as I was kind of navigating my own diagnosis, I wrote this character who, while she doesn't have all the same experience as I do, just kind of helping her through her journey was kind of therapeutic for me as I was going through my own.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. There's been a big increase in mental health issues over the past few years. Why do you think that is?
You know, I'm not sure. I've read various studies that say the increase in social media could be part of it, or maybe just better diagnosis where the mental health issues have been there but have been undiagnosed. And now that we have better systems, they're being diagnosed more often. So I've read different studies and I'm not really sure which one's correct. But I think it's good to just be aware of these issues because most people either will struggle at some point in their life or will love and care about someone who is struggling. Mm-hmm. So being able to support each other and lift each other up when we're down, I think is really important.
How do you think the pandemic affected it?
I'm not sure. I, again, have read studies going various ways on that, but I think it's important to stay connected with other people and the pandemic made that difficult. There's still virtual connection and different ways to stay connected, but I think being there for one another got a little bit harder. And some people kind of got used to squirreling away in their house and might not have reached out for help as quickly as they would have otherwise. And so I think it's important to take mental health into consideration and keep an eye out for one another, which could be difficult during a pandemic.
Do you think that the people we surround ourselves with make a big difference in our lives and our mental health?
Yes, I do. I think it's really important to be with people that are going to support you and that will love you no matter what. I think it's important to be with people who would believe that mental health issues are important because there are people out there who would say, no, just suck it up and be okay on your own. You don't need any help. And while those people can still be valid, like wonderful people, I would disagree with their opinion that mental health doesn't matter, because it does. So I think being with people who will support you in getting the help you need is important, especially for me in some of my struggles. It's been hard to reach out for help because I think I'm fine. I don't need the help. I can do this on my own. And to be with people who say, no, I would encourage you to go get some assistance has been vital to me, because sometimes I'm not even sure when I need that help, and having people around me who can let me know when I'm not, you know, myself is really important.
Mm-hmm. How do you think Natalie, like if she'd been surrounded by people who are more supportive from the beginning, do you think she would have struggled as much with accepting her mental illness?
I would hope not. I would say I would hope that it would have been easier for her and it wouldn't have been as difficult. But I think anybody getting a mental health diagnosis, that's going to be a difficult diagnosis, even if you're surrounded by supportive people. I have found in my own life that some of the people I've talked to are ready and willing to support and help me. But if I suggest that they might need help or something, they're like, no, mental health is kind of for other people, but I'm fine. You know, people like to believe that they're fine. And sometimes it's hard to understand, no, sometimes you need to reach out and get help. I think for Natalie, it would have been easier for her for sure, but I don't think it would have been easy, period. I think it would have still been a difficult diagnosis, but she might have come to terms with it a little bit faster.
That makes sense. Throughout the story, Natalie's art gave a lot of insight into what she was feeling. How useful do you think art can be as a form of expression?
I think art can be very valuable as a form of expression. In my own life, writing is my art, whereas Natalie does more visual arts. But I think for me, not only does it give me a way to kind of interpret the world around me and interpret how I'm feeling, but it gets me out of my own head for a little while and into something else. You know, it just gives me an escape. It's a way to kind of go on vacation without going on vacation. And I think for a lot of artists, they can get in this zone where they're focusing on their art, and that can give them that escape from the everyday life that they need. And then it can help others because their art can be an inspiration to other people based on the kind of art that they do. So I think art is hugely important, both in Natalie's life, but then also other people as well.
For listeners who may just now be joining us, my name is Phoebe Donovan. My guest today is Christine Webb, author of the newly released The Art of Insanity. The book is a young adult novel that centers around Natalie, a high school senior and talented artist who has just been diagnosed with bipolar. I'm curious, what do you think are the most important qualities in a friend?
That's another great question. I think the important qualities in a friend is that they will support you in what's good for you. So they don't just support you no matter what, because a friend who's going to support you while you're going down a bad path or leading towards something destructive is not actually a good friend at all. They need to be able to be supportive, but in a way that is constructive to you, and that they can have hard conversations with you when you may need a difficult conversation. They'll be there for you in love to have that conversation with you. And I think that gets overlooked sometimes because it's so much easier to say a good friend is just someone who has fun with you all the time, or a good friend is just someone who will make you feel good about yourself all the time. And while those can be great qualities in a friend, I think it's also important that they're there to be there for you when you need someone to say, hey, look out, you're going in a bad direction or something like that. So I think being supportive, but being supportive doesn't mean always doing what you want, if that makes sense.
That definitely makes sense. And there's no doubting the fact that Natalie's friends didn't react very well when she confided in them about having bipolar. Do you have any advice for people like who have just found out about a friend's mental illness? Like, how would you suggest that they react?
I would say the best thing is to let that person know that you still love them and you're still there for them, and it doesn't change how you feel about your friendship with them. Because one of the things that's most hurtful to Natalie in the book is when her friends start treating her differently now, because they say, you know, it's hard for them to have a friend with a mental illness, and now they have to tiptoe around her and they have to treat her differently. And everybody just wants to be accepted for who they are, right? So I feel like it's really important, if you have a friend who confides in you, to make sure that you tell them, I still love you just as much. I still care about you, and I'm going to treat you the same unless you tell me that I need to do something different. Like, if I'm doing something that's making things harder for you, please tell me. But we're still friends. We're still the same. And I think that's where Ella in the book does a good job of treating Natalie the same and saying, well, that doesn't make any difference to me. This is who you are, and that's great. And let's move on. You know, let's go do the next thing. So I think a sense of normalcy is really important, and not making them feel isolated or different because they've confided in you about this issue.
Do you have any advice for people who are struggling with mental illness and are keeping a secret from those around them?
Yeah, I would say my advice is to find someone to confide in who can help, because you can choose different people to confide in, but someone who can hook you up with a mental health professional or someone who can, you know, get you the help you need. If you can, if it's a teenager, I would encourage them to confide in an adult, hopefully a parent, but if a parent can't be helpful, maybe a teacher, somebody who can help connect them the right channels. Confiding in a friend can also be really important too, if they can help you get connected to where you want to be. Also just considering maybe what you've heard them say about mental illness, or what you've heard them, how they've acted around other people who may have had mental health issues. If someone is really judgmental and rude about mental health, that's probably not the person that you want to confide in. But definitely do confide in someone, because it just eats you up if you keep it to yourself and then you can't get the help that you need. So definitely find someone in your life to confide in. And if there's absolutely no one, there's confidential online therapy that you can look up and try to talk to someone there who could maybe hook you up with the help that you need.
Yeah. And I think that the reason that a lot of people aren't as supportive of like mental health is that there's a lot of stigma that surrounds the topic of mental illness. What do you think that we as a society can do to lessen that?
I think we're on the right track. I'm hopeful that we're on the right track, especially with the release of not just my book, but other books that deal with mental health issues. There have been a lot coming out recently that have at least started the conversation. I think what's really important is that we're able to talk about it and not keep it as a hush-hush secret thing. I've had family members that have, of my extended family, that have told me in the past, it's just really secret and nobody could talk about it. And, you know, if you had a problem, you just kept it to yourself. And I think being able to have an open conversation about mental health struggles is huge. And I think as a society, we're headed there. We're not there yet, but I'm hopeful that, especially with the younger generation growing up, being more open about these issues, the more we talk about them, the more we can actually fix them and get help and do what we need to do about this stigma surrounding it. So I think stopping, keeping it a secret, and getting out in the open is a really good first step.
It's not just stigma, but also like access to services. How do you think we as in everyone can do in general to make services more available to people who need them?
That's another one that I would say we're headed in the right direction. And we have the new suicide helpline. I think it's 988, but correct me if I'm wrong. I know there's a 3-digit number that you can call for suicide help. And if I am wrong, someone can Google that and find the 3-digit number, because I want you to have the right number for help. But they're trying to streamline accessibility for people who are maybe don't have the money for traditional medical access. But I think also making medical access more available to all people is important, especially there's, you know, a short of psychiatrists and maybe like rural areas or areas where you'd have to travel really far to see a doctor. And so I think part of that is just getting the providers that are willing to be out there and helping see people and getting enough providers. I know there's a shortage of therapists and counselors too. So we need more people going into those professions to be able to help the many people who are going to need it.
Finally, what do you want readers to take away from reading The Art of Insanity?
I would say it depends on the reader. If the reader is struggling with mental health themselves, I would hope that they would take away that there is hope, that their life isn't over. Because I know for me, it seemed like a very serious diagnosis. And I was like, what am I going to do? This is terrible, you know, but to have the reassurance that your life can still be great. Like you can have this struggle and you can be okay. I think if the reader is struggling with mental health, that's what I want them to take away. If the reader is not struggling with mental health themselves, I hope that they would take away how to be a more supportive friend to somebody who is struggling, because throughout their life, they will know people who struggle. And so taking away what it means to be a good friend to someone struggling and what it means to be a bad friend to someone struggling, I would like them to see those examples in the book so that they could hopefully have more compassion and be a better friend to people in their life who struggle with mental health issues.
And I think that's definitely a message that came across in the book for me. So,
oh, good.
Yeah. And I just want to say that I really enjoyed reading the book.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing your personal story and your views on these questions.
No problem. Thank you for making the time. It was great to talk to you.
My guest today has been Christine Webb, author of The Art of Insanity. My name is Phoebe Donovan, and you're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, John Kellen, Benita Lee, Alexis Kenyon, and young adult book reviewer Phoebe Donovan for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after the news headlines from the BBC.